You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, specifically Flagstaff, and sitting out here at 7,000 feet. We're having a beautiful rainstorm, and my two dogs are enjoying it. Of course, as I mentioned to you pre-interview here off air, I had to bring them in. I didn't want to get hit by lightning, since there have been a couple of lightning strikes within visible distance from where I was standing. But great being here this time of year. A lot going on in the world. It's more than we could cover, but let's get started.
The markets seem to be setting up a pattern where midweek they have a major correction. We saw one on Wednesday, but it may have been more than just a stock market cycle.
Well, we had a full moon yesterday, and Dow drops 1,100 points, and we all know the impact of full moons in emergency rooms, the lunacy supposedly attributed to full moons, and it's a cycle point. It's something you pay attention to, and it was no surprise that we did see some volatility on Wednesday. I know the market bounced back a little bit yesterday, but may not do so great tomorrow. Apple earnings came out, and apparently the stock's selling off post-market, so we'll see if that has impact. It might have some on Friday's trading. But yes, absolutely, we had that lunar cycle there, and when I saw that, and I said, here we are, watch out, change of direction, something going to happen around the lunar cycle, and you get the big sell-off. So I know we had the FOMC meeting. The new Fed Chairman Warsh was talking, and everybody was trying to interpret what he had to say. Interest rates on the long side actually went higher, and you know, a lot of fear that we're going to hell in a handbasket with higher rates. So despite that, gold rallied anyway, and no one really knows what's happening. And my position, I'm not interviewed on the big national TV networks as much as I used to be, because I'm very big cynic of the Federal Reserve, feeling it should have been abolished a long time ago. It's really an arcane institution. It's just a bunch of nonsense when they're talking about interest rate changes. The real interest rate important indicators, the long bonds, which are traded in the free market, as you and I know, nothing to do with the Fed. And that should be where it should stay. Interest rates should be determined by the free market, not by a central bank, which has made so many blunders. And you and I have talked about this, and you've documented a lot yourself over the decades. Pretty much an arcane institution. What Warsh does, what doesn't do, and all the secret stuff the Fed does, and the money supply issue, what are they doing with the money supply? Are they injecting money into the system, withdrawing money from the system? The rates are really sort of irrelevant. What about the huge debt we have? And that sort of brings me to my next topic, because one of my big points this past week was coming out with my big picture official new target for gold. So my new official big picture for targets and for gold, and this has to do with debt, has to do with whether the Federal Reserve continues to exist or not, whether the U.S. government decides to reprice the gold that's in Fort Knox, which we doubt whether it's actually there, which is currently priced around $42 an ounce, or not. But I have a new target, and this, multi-year target. And I think it's theoretically possible of 38,000 for gold. This is, of course, priced in U.S. dollars. At the same time, I'm thinking silver could be about 1,800 during this same scenario. So how do we come up with that number? Well, we can use total U.S. federal debt, which now is approximately $40 trillion, and there's approximately 261 million troy ounces of gold that the U.S. claims it has. That's about 8,100 metric tons. So if you divide that $40 trillion of debt by the gold price, it actually comes out to You got to hold on to your pants for this one, your shorts. It's actually comes out to $153,000 per ounce, not the 38 that I just mentioned. So using all the federal debt actually produces a number far above what I gave you. So maybe we need to bring that in here a little bit. So instead of that, let's use a portion of government obligations. Let's come up with, say, $10 trillion, okay? And if you divide that by the amount of ounces that the government says it has, and again, I question that number. We really, despite what our Secretary Treasury tells us, Bessert, I don't, you know, until I see every vault in the Fort Knox, and some of it could be stored, I was told, in other locations in the New York Fed, or even in some other military locations. But even so, if you take that $10 trillion, you come up with about $38,000. So you can do other formulas. You can take the money supply and divide that out by the gold, and you come up with about $36,000 an ounce. So we have a long way to go because the Fed's out of control. Interest rates, they can't control the market. They can't raise rates. The psychological impact would be devastating on the market. The cost of covering the U.S. debt is apparently now above budgets. I may be incorrect in this. Might be greater than the military budget. And certainly we have social programs like Medicare and Medicaid in the U.S. So if we're just paying an interest on a debt and we can't cover other U.S. expenses, obviously that interest rate's got to come down. It actually should go back to zero where it was, where Jay Powell kept it for many years. And that would help, I'm not saying it balance budgets, but it would certainly help things along. So get rid of the Fed altogether. But if you're going to keep it, go back to that 0%. But in any event, things are going to unravel in a big way. And we're going to see some huge gold prices. Now, the big issue is what happens if it does do that? I mean, is the gold could be confiscated like Roosevelt did, you know, back in the 1930s? I mean, the fact that it's there, is it something that you could actually use in terms of transactions? What's the paper money going to be worth at that point? You can't trade, you know, go into the supermarket and buy groceries with gold unless you have tiny denominations, and whether people would even accept it. Again, what's the currency going to be at that point? Is it going to even exist? Which currencies are going to even be viable? It's going to be a wild scenario, and I guess my greatest fear is the fear of confiscation. I mean, in Europe, they're already talking about this. I mean, the rumors and stories that I've heard, you know, and they've done it before where they freeze assets, where you can't buy gold. In fact, we just heard, you know, last week on our interview, Jim, you know, we talked about on July 24th, China stopped futures trading in the retail for gold purchases. In other words, you had to buy the physical. You can't do as what's done here in the U.S. with the COMEX and the London market, where you're trading, you know, more in the COMEX than the London market, but future trading, in which you're trading paper, not really metal. So there's a lot of, you know, cross currents out here and how it's all going to play out. And you're hearing my favorite buddy, Douglas, my bulldog in the background. So he's acknowledging my interview. In any event, that's something we all could be thinking about. I definitely would want to have possession of physical, and be prepared for. And this could be a multi-year comment. You know, I'm just guessing between now and say 2032, this could all happen. And I think it could be a big surprise to many. So obviously, you should be a buyer of gold. But the other thing to be buyer of is gold companies. You know, during the early 1930s, the best performing stocks on the New York Stock Exchange were gold stocks. And I think it was ASA Limited or Newmont Mining at the time. I believe one of those were trading, and they had tremendous gains, percentage gains, where most other stocks weren't doing very well. So, you know, a company like one of my favorites, Newmont Mining, I mean, you know, which is the largest gold company, a miner out there. I mean, in a scenario where gold is at these astronomical prices, I mean, stocks like could be a 1,000% in terms of money they're going to be making, you know, mining gold at those prices. It doesn't have to be 38,000. I mean, first you get to 10 and 15. So the shares are going to be just tremendous.
Oh, so you're saying gold to 38,000, not 3,800.
38,000, correct. Wow. Did I say 3,800?
Yeah.
No, 38,000. Mm-hmm. So the money that could be made will be made from gold companies and miners with those kind of prices. It's just off the charts. So keep in mind that the shares, particularly if you can find some that pay some dividends, you know, would be great, I think, you know, opportunity. So the big bull market finally got back into gear here, and we saw the big blow-off in January. And, you know, a lot of the selling that came in gold was because of liquidation, particularly by, I'm told, you know, foreign governments, Russia and others, because they had to pay off debts and they needed to raise money. And so they had to sell something, and, you know, the old expression, they throw the baby out with the bathwater. When the markets go down, people sell, you know, everything, which could include the gold. So there could still be some risk here. I mean, in fact, I wanted to make a point, since we're discussing, you know, the risk factor. There are political cycles, as we all know, and we do get sharp market corrections, and sometimes gold, you know, participates inversely, but many times along with the actual market, both upside or the downside. Since I have some records here, since 1906, I mean, just to run over some of these numbers, and might as well go over them. I mean, go back during Teddy Roosevelt's administration, the market lost in that his tenure and one correction, 48% of its value. And President Taft in 1910, market dropped 30% under Herbert Hoover. Of course, we know what happened with the Great Depression and the crash. The market lost 86%. And then under Lyndon Johnson in 1966, we had a 26% correction. Under Richard Nixon in 74, we had a 46% correction. In 87, under Ronald Reagan, we had a 40% correction. Under Bush Jr., we had 38% in 2002. And again in 2008-09, where we lost 54%. So I think, you know, the chances, and then, oh, in Donald Trump's first term, 2020, we lost 38% in one of the corrections during his time in office. So I'd be looking for, you know, in this cycle, for the end of his term, which is, you know, in the next 2 years, and it could happen a lot sooner, of course, I'd be looking, you know, 35 to 40% shakeout in the markets. And we've already started to see some corrections, some of the big name AI and hyperscaler names and so forth, whether it's now. But cycles sort of indicate that we should have some pullback into the end of the year or into that traditional October-November period. So we'll see if it's now or later, but you should be on your tippy toes getting yourself prepared for some big volatility here. And of course, the midterm election in November, everybody's a little nervous, and rightfully so. You know, Democrats are not the best answer for our government, in my opinion. And I think, you know, the other argument is that if the Democrats gain some ground in Congress, it could be, and let's say just the House and not the Senate, there could be stalemates and little or no action. And sometimes the stock market interprets that positively. In other words, if Congress is not able to do anything and it's frozen and they can't create or destroy anything, markets sort of like that because they don't trust the politicians and what they generally do. So there's a sort of contrary thinking here a little bit that, you know, we lose some House seats and the U.S. House turns more Democratic than Republican. Yeah, the stock market may sell off, but it may recover because of the realization that, hey, these guys can't do any more damage. I mean, if the Senate goes, that might be different. But if it's a balance between the two houses, then it could just be a stalemate, and that could be interpreted ultimately more positively. But that just you know, speculative comment on my part. It just that you could see I'm quite cynical about how all this is going to play out. But market cycles, so you got to be careful. And I think that's where I wanted to end our first segment.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, do lunar cycles play a role in what happens in the stock markets?
Well, they're coincident indicators. And we had a full moon, as I mentioned at the top of our interview, and we had a 1,100-point shakeout in the Dow on Wednesday. And it's a warning. It says it could be a change of direction around those time frame. Of course, it was coincident with the FOMC meeting, but you know, I've been charting these things for decades, and you always want to plot where we are, looking at a lot of geocosmic stuff. As you know, I look at the seasonal patterns, and since, you know, we just came out of the summer solstice in June, and now we're, of course, going to be eyeing the autumnal equinox. It comes up in September, September 22nd, 23rd. And again, you know, there have been some changes of market direction in September and October, and that's just a seasonal something you got to pay attention to. So I look at the summer solstice, the autumnal equinox, the winter solstice, and the vernal equinox in spring as just general change of direction periods. Could be minor, sometimes significant. Of course, you tie this in with a lot of other stuff. And, you know, you look at the lunar cycles. We just had the full moon on Wednesday. We have a new moon coming up August 12th. Which is really interesting because that's the day of a total solar eclipse. Apparently, you see it in Russia, Greenland, Iceland, and Spain, so we're not going to see it in this part of the world. But the event of solar eclipses is just not, you know, a pretty picture in the sky. I mean, there's some serious cyclical geocosmic impact to these eclipses in terms of affecting the planet, and affecting human psychology, affecting weather. There's all kinds of stuff that just, you know, a little bit of anecdotal, but it's been going on for thousands of years. And on top of all that, we've got the super El Nino. Looks like it may be underway here with the Pacific Ocean heating up, and some of this may be attributed to higher solar activity. And the so El Nino has big effects on weather patterns and rain, particularly in the Pacific and the Western Pacific. The Atlantic hurricanes may be less minimal this year if that El Super Nino, you know, really kicks in, as people are saying. So as you can see, you know, we're looking at a, you know, a lot of stuff here besides what the Federal Reserve is saying or what the major news, financial news networks are telling us about the markets and forecasting. But in a very short term, there are some multiple CMEs coming, coronal mass ejections from the sun that are due here now, and they're incoming. We don't know how intense they're going to be, but they are being tracked, and they said it could possibly produce a G1 class geomagnetic storm, which I guess we'll just see more auroras in the atmosphere and stuff, but there's always the risk of, you know, something bigger happening. And we also have, you know, meteor shower time now. This is an interesting time of year. The most famous, of course, is the Perseids, which, you know, doesn't peak until August 12th, so it could be starting already where you could start to see these. But there's also two others that are occurring now. And, you know, the most interesting is called the Alpha Capricornid stream. It's Capricornid ID at the end of Capricorn. And it comes from a parent comet called 16169P/NEAT. So apparently it's some spinoff of a comet that's, you know, we are passing the tail to its tail at this time of year. And there's also another one going on. They say it's sort of a mystery. No knows where it comes from. So they say the Southern Delta Aquinids, the SDAs, produce as many as 20 meteors per hour, you know, this time of year. So, you know, chances if you stand out at night between these three, there could be some interesting, you know, meteor shower activity. And, you know, all this, you know, means something. You know, are they going to hit anything? Are they going to be a larger size? Are they just the cycle of it all, just, you know, just part and parcel to this time of year? And, you know, just interesting what it all means. But also, I'm always thinking skeptically what we don't know. You know, is going to be some type of surprise. We've had a couple huge meteors or minor asteroids enter the Earth's atmosphere in recent years. The big one over Russia a few years ago created that huge explosion. There's always the risk of something a little bit more dramatic hitting the planet. And despite the fact that we're told there's no asteroid risk, you know, there always could be some type of surprise. And also, interesting coming up, I did want to touch on this. We may have touched on it last week, and this makes me very nervous. But so apparently a dead SpaceX rocket is closing in on the moon, and around the same early August time frame, supposedly on August 5th, it's an old Falcon 9 upper stage rocket going to slam into the lunar surface. Now, maybe I'm the dumbest person on Earth, but I don't know why you would want to slam anything into the moon. We've had experiments done in the past, apparently in recent decades, where they drop stuff on the lunar surface. And they measured, activity on the planet, geoactivity and so forth, seismic activity, and they found out that the moon rang like a bell, and that produced many theories that the moon is actually hollow or partially hollow in some way. So it may be, the whole video is an analysis on this, and this sounds far-fetched to many, but not to me. All the research says there's something really odd about the structure itself, the way it's positioned. There's actually historical documents going back in ancient civilizations claiming there was a time before the moon, instigating the theory that perhaps the moon came at a much later point. It might have been placed there by some extraterrestrial civilization, not necessarily formed in the natural geocosmic or geological manner that common theory presents. But bringing up the rocket hitting the moon, I'm just nervous about it. I mean, you don't know what the effect, I mean, if the moon's partially hollow or not. I mean, could you spin off rocks, or you could break portions of the moon off, and stuff of that could end up coming back to Earth and causing damage here on our planet. This is something, in my opinion, should have been avoided and should be avoided, because you're dealing with an unknown situation. And in my opinion, a lot of what they say we know about the moon is not really true, and we know that secret bases have been found there. Some claim they're alien bases on the other side, on the dark side, and even though we've seen some pictures with the recent asteroid activity, apparently a lot of other photographs and other evidence has been uncovered before that. So don't fool around with the moon, and it could be very dangerous. And I have, you know, in a private scenario, I'd probably discuss my feelings even stronger about this, because of another contact or experience I had with regard to this whole situation of hitting the moon. But anyway, that's what's going on. So a lot of geocosmic stuff. And I do want to remind listeners that they should take a look at the Paradigm Institute, and you go to their website in terms of their UFO disclosure. They used to have some Sunday meetings. I don't think there's one coming up this Sunday, but there's still a lot of stuff going on in terms of what's going on in the extraterrestrial or cover-up. In terms of what records are being released, what portions of the documents are being blacked out, which ones we're actually seeing. It's a very serious situation. And it's, in fact, you know, on top of all the analysis I do, stock market, investing, all the things that affect my life, and the non-disclosure aspect of this for decades, and the secret activity that our government and other governments have been involved with, is really so distasteful and so important to all of us that we find out what's really going on. And I can only believe that, you know, some of the biggest, you know, I guess the greatest story of our time, and I guess I can close with this, is surrounding the enslavement of humanity. by withholding advanced technology that apparently we are privy to, that we might have reverse engineered, that we're aware of with extraterrestrial or other contact. And what's so dramatic about it is that if many of the revelations that I believe could eventually come true and be proved, that, you know, all our energy needs, all our technological needs, everything could be solved. And I think, you know, the powers that be are unfortunately in a position of profiting by keeping things status quo. And I think that's part of the reason why we're not getting the full revelations that we should really get or see. And I don't know what's going to have to happen politically for that to happen or change, but it will happen at some point. So with that, I would encourage you to check with the New Paradigm Institute, because they do some great stuff. And if you know, you listen to you know, the presentations there, I think you really have some eye-opening insights of what's really going on. Very important that you do that. So it's called the New Paradigm Institute. You can email that and check it out. So, you know, just imagine, Jim, you know, if this information really came out, you know, it's almost like, you know, the day the Earth stood still, you know, where Klaatu comes out of the spaceship and Gort is standing there, and there's a full UFO landing in a plaza in Washington, D.C., and the whole world sees it. What would that really mean? You know, I'm not saying it's going to happen that way, but, you know, I think the powers that be realize that the change to our socioeconomic system could be perhaps too dramatic for them to handle, and there could be they fear a great loss of power and control, and I think that's probably why the cover-up continues. But, you know, the fact that we're, and I don't mean this lightly, the fact that we're not being told about some of this great technology that we have access to or been in contact with is really enslaving us, because we're sticking with the old ways. You know, we're going back, what, over 100 years with Nikola Tesla and his idea of drawing energy from the earth and providing free energy to everyone. That disappeared. You know, why would we be offered free energy when power companies and others can profit by selling us energy, for example? So, you know, Tesla was on the right track. And I think, believe it or not, I think a lot of that technology does exist, and or much greater, and we are just not being told about it. We're being told about AI and about power stations and, you know, hyperscalers and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But that's not really the big story. So anyway, hopefully you guys can check that out, and have a great week.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Find us on X at HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.